This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Chris Palmer.
And none of us are Mike Beats, who is trapped. Where is Mike traveling to? Some tournament?
He's going to Alta, because Alta starts tomorrow.
He's going to Alta Kaka tournament. And
they have a Sunday
in
Utah.
Yeah, Sunday.
So they have to start on Thursday.
I was actually looking at Facebook right before we started talking, and there was a thing from Mike. I'm at the airport. You know, he has his phone turned on, so every time he like shows up anywhere, we know about it. You know.
My favorite is when you get those ones that say, you know, Mike Beats is at the airport with 52 others. And I'm like, boy, it's a light day at LAX and there's only 52 people there.
Well, there have been some embarrassing things that have turned up where people have shown up at places where they might not want their mother or their child to know they were there. So,
well, can't you? You can check other people into places, I believe.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff you can do like that.
So if you had a Foursquare account, I could check you into a strip club in Vegas right now if I wanted to or something. So
yeah, there's this other thing.
Our listeners are wondering what the hell is going on.
Okay.
All right, fair enough. Let's go on topic. Huh?
Okay, we do have a topic. We do have a topic, and it is inspired by some of the discussion that's been going on lately at the Victory Briefs website about sexism in the activity, and LD in particular, I guess, although I think we can talk about a more broader thing if we get into that. But John, I think of you as our feminist, you know, not because we're anti-feminist, but because you actually give that class and everything at institutes and so forth. So why don't you actually frame the issue?
This is actually kind of, and I'm not trying to do a cop-out, but it's sort of a difficult issue two frame, because I think that there are a lot of different intertwined, intersecting issues. And actually what inspired the initial discussion on VBD was a post that somebody made. Paris Kumar made the post, and he noted that only five girls broke at Green Hill. And this was noting it after how few girls broke at the Glen Brooks. Only eight girls broke at Bronx Science in October. And so he asked, has it always been like this, or is the class of 2011 just way out of the norm, sort of as a general question? Mm-hmm. And I guess that sort of ties into a feature that I'm bringing back on VBD, the Ask Cruz column with like debate trivia and history and sort of conversation starters, like, you know, has this always been the case or not? And actually Sophie Ruff, Mr. Menick's star debater, then asked if, and I'm just quoting her thread, do you guys, and actually she's speaking to all people, though she's saying guys, do you guys think that this is a reflection of proportionally fewer girls succeeding in the activity or just fewer girls being in the activity? And I actually thought that was an interesting question, sort of as a starting point for discussion, is the fact that so few girls, and it is so few, it's a very, very low number, so few girls advancing at these very, very hyper-competitive tournaments, is this a reflection of the number of girls in the activity or the success of girls in the activity?
You're raising a question that I just want to – is this also true at non-high-profile?
Another important question. And I just want to also note that a related question to me, is this specific to Lincoln-Douglas debate? Is it specific to debate, or is it specific to – you know, is it a forensics issue?
I can actually answer a lot of these questions with data.
Good.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago in the rostrum, there was an article by the head coach of the Newton South program, Lisa Honeyman, who is a statistics teacher. She teaches AP stats as, you know, her actual teaching. And so she went through and very laboriously, because they didn't have computer files with this data in it, encoded about 2 or 3 years worth of NFL nationals. And she focused on the speech side of things, and it wasn't entirely scientifically rigorous because she was guessing gender based on name, and we know that's not 100% accurate, but close enough, you know, close enough in the absence of other data. And what she found at the 6 speech events is that each year there was roughly, I believe it was something like an 80-20 split male-female in the extemps, which is what you'd expect. And there was a 60-40 split male-female in the interps, which is not.
I was actually surprised that it's not more girls in the interps.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and the only event where there were more girls than guys was a 60-40 split in favor of females in oratory. And so right off the bat you have a tournament that is mostly males, and that
Statistic.
every break level, every advanced level, finals, semis, and so forth has fewer females in it than would be predicted by random chance. And I believe like
Now, I'm sorry, you may have just said this and I already blanked, but this was at which tournaments? This is at,
NFL Nationals.
okay,
This
NFL
is
Nationals. Okay,
just
got it,
NFL
got it,
Which is a
got it.
good broad snapshot
Sure.
of the
You got a big
activity.
cross section of the country, you have different circuits, you have different styles. So, and so she found that, I believe one year there were so few females in finals compared to how many there were in the field that out of like 1,000 tournaments, only three would produce that result by random chance. Like infinitesimally small chances that this was not the result of some systematic weeding out of females. So she published this a couple of years ago, and it didn't really get much response. I mean, she got a couple of emails saying, "Oh, I'm so glad somebody said something about that," but it didn't really go any further than that. There were really no action taken. So, what I can draw from that, even though it isn't ironclad data, is that yes, in fact, girls are weeded out both in terms of the population of all forensics and also in terms of success, even
Well,
when the
part of
girls
it
are
is,
better.
remember, they had to qualify to get there in the first
Right,
place
and I was
already,
about to say that. So that may actually speak to the whole issue of success levels in the activity as well, even on the
Yeah,
local.
exactly. So we don't know if that 60-40 split is true at the local level. It'd be interesting to see what it was in the
But you
district
got,
level, but
I
I
mean,
have
you
no
guys
data.
might have at least an anecdotal answer. See, I can't answer this on my own team because my team is too small. But you have like big teams. I mean, and so you can just look out when you have a meeting. Is it like
Yeah, well, I'll tell you
50-50
right.
or what?
Sure. I'll tell you right now that two observations. Interestingly, in policy debate last year, we had an enormous number of female novices, which I thought was actually quite odd. And the reason I thought it was quite odd is because in my observation, we do tend to get more boys than girls in debate. I'll talk about the speech side of things in a moment. But I actually found it to be most profound in policy debate, and then in public, and then I'm sorry, then in Lincoln Douglas debate. And in speech, we tend to see more girls than boys, and I can talk about why I think that is in a second as well. And anecdotally, I also know teams where boys were sort of encouraged to debate more, and girls were sort of encouraged to speak more and be in the speech events, et cetera. Yeah, I mean, so the fact that we had so many female novices in policy debate was something to be commented on. And even in a team like Bronx Science, it's a very large team. We have a large Lincoln Douglas debate squad. I can count actually the number of female varsity debaters that I have in Lincoln Douglas debate on one hand,
But
which
did they
is
start out and leave, or
some of
did they
them.
not
So
start out?
I found that a number of them start out and have moved to either public forum debate or moved to speech or have stopped. Now, mine has not been as profound, I think, as some other teams because a lot of these kids stay. They just do other events. But it's something that I have noticed. And I find particularly interesting in terms of LD because if you actually look at the history of LD, right, if you look at LD in the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of very, very successful female LDers at the very top of debate. Multiple female TOC winners, strong female coaches, which is something that I think it gets left out of this conversation. But
Yeah, I gotta say that when I was reading the thread, it kind of made me snap up and look a little while because I've always felt that LD was more gender equitable, and it sort of thought about it for 10 seconds. I was like, "Good God, no, it isn't anymore." But because I grew up in the '90s and I grew up in that era, I think of LD as a little female dominated in a
Yeah,
way.
exactly. And I think the other interesting thing is, and I could be totally off base on this, and this is going to attract criticism, I know, but it's interesting to me that these issues seem to be raised more in LD as we see an adopting more quote unquote policy debate like things in LD about the culture of LD. I can't help but think that that's not coincidental because this has been a problem that has been very publicly talked about in policy debate for a long
Okay,
time.
so that's one. I mean, this is. I mean, can I accept that there are just more guys in policy, right?
Oh, I mean, I think that's definitely true.
Okay, so I just have a question. This is another factual question we might not be able to answer. But today, are most of our judges male?
I don't know that most of our judges are male. I know that most of our most preferred judges are male.
Yeah, that's good enough because those are the ones. I mean, that these particular. I mean, I'm just my thought process is sort of like as you say, John. I mean, in the '90s, you know, women met. I seem to be a lot of coaches of every gender you could think of, and you didn't have to think far. But yeah, any gender you could think of, there was coaches. But also, what we did not have was what I would refer to as a professional class of judges.
Sure.
And as we've developed, which is not unlike policy, which has a professional class of judges who are capable of doing the speed, you know, and are used to the arguments and all this sort of stuff. As we develop those people, I mean, we tend to have this, you know, this group of guys in college. And guys in college are, as a general rule, guys in college who are actually hanging out at high schools on the weekends. I've always had grave misgivings about that particular group of people overall. So then I wonder if maybe part of our issue is if as you know, as coaches have moved away from judging. I don't judge. I mean, I'm in tab room. We're all in tab rooms way more than we're judging. Mm-hmm. I mean, and and when I do go into a round to judge, I'm not as comfortable as I used to be because I just don't do it that often. So as we have outsourced our judging to, and I'm fine with, I don't have anything against judges who know what they're doing. I don't want to make the different argument. But as we have done this, it's college kids. And so the college kids tend, and they tend to be male for whatever reason. And I have my ideas what those reasons are, but that's all just speculative. So as by the virtue of having created a class of highly preferred judges who are college males, has that mitigated against the females who, I mean, unless you, and I don't think either you're going to say that women are not as good as guys at this. So have they mitigated?
No, I think it has I think it has a different root that may be connected to, which is that young people and people who are in college 1 or 2 or 3 years out of high school are not going to keep, you know, a lid on the Lord of the Flies instincts of the kids as well as older people will. So if you have a 19-year-old who walks, you know, by some kids and sees something untoward, I feel like they are far less confident and far less likely to call kids out who are up to shenanigans of any sort.
That makes sense.
And they observe it. Whereas older folks who, you know, people who don't view the high school debaters at some level as social peers are much more likely to, you know, put a stop to any kind of bad behavior when they see it. And so I wonder if there's a sort of impact here of the college judges by being a larger percentage of the adults at a tournament, therefore don't, you know, exercise that sort of civilizing restraint on people in general. And one of the manifestations is more sexism.
I think that makes sense. I think another thing that gets sort of not spoken about, and I could be totally wrong on this, but I don't think I am, and that is that as LD developed into something that is more comparable to policy debate in terms of structure and style, that has also perhaps had a gendered, there's been a gendered outcome to that. So what do I mean by that? You know, LD in the 90s, I understand that there were fast rounds and people used evidence. I'm certainly not saying that, you know, what wasn't like real debate, because it was real debate, but the manner in which the round was conducted was certainly A, more conversational in speed. I think that we can just agree, right? Rounds were not as often fast. And what was considered fast then, at least from what I can, you know, and I debated locally in the late 90s, and I can think of rounds that were fast by any standard, but didn't have like the debate voice fast. They didn't have
I wouldn't have minded inviting my own parents to watch a round.
Right, exactly.
I would not have expected them to be blown away and not able to understand any of it.
Yeah. Right. And I think that with that lack of emphasis on traditional communication skills, now you start to have things like, you know, when people speak fast, they tend to speak loud. They tend to do these things. And in my experience, boys and girls are very frequently treated differently when they're doing the same thing in terms of fast debate. So what do I mean by that? A girl who is loud and aggressive on the points is seen as a bitch. And boys and girls and boys who are do that are seen as cool. And I think that's, you know, I maybe have to bleep that out that I said that, but whatever. I think it's, there's no other way to put it. That's the stereotype that exists.
Yeah, it's the Hillary Clinton stereotype.
Yes, it is the Hillary Clinton stereotype. Yeah. For the sake of full disclosure, I volunteered for Hillary Clinton and love her, but I think that it
I donated to her. So
same with me, damn it. So
God, I can't stand Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, well, too bad.
Well, it's because you listen to Rush Limbaugh too much, Jim.
But I mean, I do think that that is a very real part of it. I think that everything that you guys are saying about the professional judging clause is also a real part of it. But I think that as those things come into LD or came into LD, it doesn't surprise me that girls are interpreted differently.
But surely that's not sufficient explanation, though.
Because I don't think it's
that doesn't carry over to speech at all. Certainly, I mean, extemp is conversational speed, and you have to look long and far to. I mean, when Becca, one of my students, won U.S. Extemp Nationals in 2008, the last year a girl had won that event was the year she was born. And so,
girls extemp? No, I'm just kidding.
I know. I mean, there had been more on the foreign side, but U.S. Right. extemp had not been won by a female since like 1991 or 90 or whatever it was.
I can't help but think of that as a vestige of a mindset that I believe does still exist on a lot of teams, which is that speech is for girls and debate is for boys.
Yeah. And that was fairly true on Newton South.
Yeah.
Where we did no sorting.
And in some ways, I think that that's still present even on teams where that's not what the coach is trying to do. Because let's be honest,
Lisa was the one who wrote the article about discrimination.
Right.
Like, we had no intention to do that, but yet we looked at the debate team, and other than our captain last year, they were all boys, and the extempers were mostly boys, with the exception of Becca and one other very strong extemper we had before Becca. And then on the interp squad, it's this sea of girls with a very few boys.
Yeah. And think about the sort of related implications that come with speech and debate. You know, if there's already the mindset that a girl who does really top level debate must be super aggressive, well, let's be honest, the mindset that I think frightens some boys from doing speech, and we've talked about this with my own speechies who are boys, is that it's seen as very effeminate to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some other aspects here that we're missing out. I mean, there is a reason that girls are going to go into interp more than boys, and it's very simple because girls read and boys don't. And a lot of interp just happens. is going to be the result of having a literary background of some sort.
And
so the boys don't even understand this stuff. I mean, they're just this is one of the big problems in the universe today, and certainly in English-speaking society, because it's also true in England, that you can't get boys to read. Theater is another issue, you know.
Yeah,
so that takes it even to another level.
Call, you find 83 women who can play the women roles, and good God, you're digging under rocks to find male leads. So,
you've excluded them at the point of they don't have a literary background, and then they have to have a theatrical background, which really builds on it, or at least is the same kind of thing. And so they're going to be fewer and further between. Yep. So, I mean, one of the things
I did a lot of theater in college, and the stereotype was always that techies like women and actors like men, and the gender of the two does not matter. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing. That's the same effect. Yeah.
When I do our recruiting, I go from a premise that people sort of already know what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people sort of gravitate, rather than try to convince them that they should go one place or the other, which never seems to work, they just sort of gravitate. So I will have, even in a small team like mine, there is more gravitation of girls to the speech events. But then that doesn't answer that issue where how come then at NFL the girls weren't there. Like, I know you guys are giving a buy to extemp, which I didn't really understand why that is a male activity.
I can tell you why. I think if there is the notion that debate is the boys' activity, I can see the relationship to extemp and debate more than I can from interps and debate.
Okay, John, you can answer.
And there used to be boys' extemp and girls' extemp, which is the most stunning thing of all to me.
And John, into the 80s, too.
Yeah. John, in your... like I say, you are actually have a scholarly background in the feminist thing. Are gender roles and concepts of gender roles and thinking about gender roles something that people do more as adolescents? I mean, or at least as like 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds. Is that something that is more in their heads at that age than some other ages or something? Because, I mean,
I actually don't, not quite sure I know what you mean by that. What do you mean? That
I mean, if in other words, I'm not going to do this because it's a girl's thing, or I'm going to do this because it's a boy's thing, or I'm not going to do this because it's a boy's thing.
I don't think
that
plays into the initial choice, because in my experience, we get just as many novices, female and male, and what happens is the boys stick with it and the girls don't. And that's actually one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it on this podcast, because I feel like, and the impression I got from the girls who commented on the Victory Brief thread confirms this, I feel like it's something at the tournaments, that speech and debate appeals equally to males and females, and the females are being driven away. And I can think of many, many very promising novice extempers, females, who at some point in their sophomore year just decided that something else was a higher priority, and they enjoyed extemp and they enjoyed debate, but you know, I like this other thing too, and I'm going to really focus on that.
Okay, a question then. Is this the activity in the rounds, or is this the atmosphere of everything else, or a combination of the two?
I think that the activity and the atmosphere of the tournament is the thing we can control better. So I've tended to focus on that because, I mean, if you don't like the extemping itself, but I don't see why if you didn't like extemping itself or debating itself, you'd even go in there in the first place, why you would make it through.
Because I'd be hard-pressed to say that the activities, I mean, absent what I said before about because you have a literary bent or you don't, have any real gender connection at all.
Is that the girls who were extempers, they weren't going out and joining the knitting circle. I mean, the other activities they were doing were political activism and newspapers, and you know that it was extempy kind of things and debatey kind of things that have the same skills.
Right.
So I don't think
so.
It really
it's the
is
tournament itself that may be to blame.
That's what I strongly suspect. You know, and you know, each of them probably had a reason. Other, you know, it could be a lot of things. Each of them had a reason that wasn't, oh, I hate this activity because the boys are all mean. But when they go to a tournament and they're sitting there and they're the only female in the prep room, or they're the only female in all their rounds, you know, and that, you know, doesn't exactly make them welcome. And if there's ugly comments going on about senior girl debaters in the cafeteria, then even more so.
Right.
I mean, I have this image of high school. I mean, I went to high school. I went to a boys' school, and
well, then you clearly can't comment.
I know, I mean, you know, I mean, adolescent boys are as a group. I mean, a particularly hideous animal. And if you put
especially
a lot of them together, and we see certain schools that are like this, but if you put a lot of boys together, I mean, first of all, all of these people are teenagers. So say what you will about them, they're all teenagers, and yeah, they're all experimenting with their lives and growing up and all this kind of stuff, and which is great. And but they aren't. They don't have the confidence of adults in social situations. So the social situations for a lot of them. I mean, this is, you know, we take a tournament, and I'm not trying to analyze why, but we take a tournament. We take a tournament. All these people come from other places. So all these people who aren't like the world's necessarily greatest socializers are forced to socialize somehow. And what happens there, the mechanics of what happened there, I mean, then that would be the problem, whatever that is. Somehow it becomes exclusionary. I mean, is that the first thing, that the guys hang out with the guys and they don't hang out with the girls, and there's not enough girls so that they
feel, isn't this a problem that people talk about in, like, congressional debate? Isn't this, like, infamous in student Congress?
Oh, yeah.
Especially student Congress because it is clubby by nature. Yeah.
Well,
so it's
the
like
event
the boys
itself
club.
Is
yeah, I mean, it's clubby.
Success is how good you play the club, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah, but this stuff isn't clubby so much as just, you know.
Well,
I know, how many 15-year-old boys are all that comfortable just walking up to some girl and striking up a conversation? You know?
Well, and
I think that's part of it.
They're not very comfortable. I don't think that the thing that they're not comfortable with isn't striking up a conversation. Mm-hmm. I think the thing they're not comfortable with is when someone else says something awful. They're not comfortable calling them out on it.
I think that's true.
You know, I think we can assume the awful thing will be said. I think the trouble is what happens after the awful thing is said. There is no recourse in the female debater's mind.
So in other
because
words,
all of the boys don't say a word and don't even, and most of them will laugh because they feel like that's expected of them.
So in other words, it's like they're gossiping or whatever, and or yeah. and then making up stuff, or you know, just telling stories, whatever the case may be.
At the, and it gets at progressively the, worse.
At progressive. Someone else's disadvantage, you know, and that starts to create the atmosphere.
Yeah, right. And they also tend to pick on differences too. I mean, mm-hmm. teenagers, the one thing a teenager never wants to be is the only person doing something. And so mm-hmm. they tend to go right for differences. And one of the differences at a debate tournament is when there's a 90-10 female ratio is when you're the girl, you know? So I kind of feel like that dynamic is at the root of a lot of this.
I just wonder about having, again, being one of those teenager people, where I would have always preferred to be, I'd want to go meet the girls. You know, I mean, it was like, you know, I was like, I had hormones and stuff, you know, so I'd like to, that would seem to be something that would be desirable, to be on the good side of the girls rather than on the bad side of the girls. So,
yeah.
But I think you may be right.
Well, I, had no
I have no experience. I have no experience.
Yeah, I was going to say you're the only one in the podcast who can speak to that.
Sorry. So.
Yeah, but I mean, What I don't have is I can't think. I mean, recently where I've been, we tend to be flies on the wall to some extent of discussions and whatever, and the kids sort of forget you're around, I think, sometimes. And I don't have a lot of recollection of. I have no recollection of these kinds of things going on, or even suspiciously going on, or being covered or anything. I mean, it doesn't connect to anything that I know personally.
I think
that doesn't make it wrong. I'm just saying this, you know.
I think that's the point, though. They wouldn't say it around me, and they wouldn't say it around you, and they wouldn't say it around John. But would they say it around, say, Matt Dunay, who's only 2 years out of high school?
Not to
call him out in particular. I'm just sort of the first one I thought of. Or would they say it around Andrew Wax? Or would they say it, you know, next year? Would they say it around any of the seniors who are graduating this year? Maybe. Mm-hmm. And would those freshmen in college feel comfortable with taking the action that one of the three of us would? Maybe not.
And I think I actually think it's interesting that you mentioned them, because one thing that sort of also comes to mind, and this is not to call anyone out specifically, but it's sort of related both to the issue that Jim is talking about like a professional class of coaches, or I'm sorry, of judges, who don't really have any school affiliation. So they're not really being held accountable by anyone. And then on the other hand, I'm thinking to myself, well, I would hope that Andrew and Matt, you know, would tell me something or say something, because I've trained them as you know, my coaches. But I wonder how many of us who do have larger programs that have an assistant coach, things like that, which is, you know, very common and very understandable for a team of any size, because if you're going to have a lot of kids, you need help running the team. But I wonder how many people take the time to talk about these kinds of things with the people they
Your kids. I mean, look at Andrew and Matt, good examples. They're going to be in rounds all the time, whereas your kids are off half the time. Yeah, so they're going to miss everything, because we're going to keep them busy.
And I don't think if they didn't call out somebody, or if that they didn't tell you about something, that's a moral failing on their part.
Sure.
I think that they just aren't necessarily feel as empowered at a tournament. I go to tournaments, and even when I'm a normal schlub judge, I still halfway feel like I'm running the damn things. I mean, you know, I have a lot of explicit or implicit tournament. At Bronx, I was just a normal schlub judge, and yet I yelled at judges to get the things moving, and people kept asking
which
me
I appreciate.
I mean, it's just sort of the natural role you fit in when you've been around the activity long enough. You have authority. But I wouldn't expect that of a freshman in college. I don't put that burden on them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and it may happen when there are no adults around. There are plenty of opportunities for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly times when they're just all sitting around and you're not, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had a thought, you know, I was sort of driving towards this. And, you know, far be it for me to, you know, be the first person to say that collegiate debate is doing something better than high school is. So it is with extreme reluctance that I bring forward this notion and this thing that the college debaters do, which is interesting, and I wonder if it could somehow be adapted to apply. At the Parliamentary Debate Association, APDA, tournaments, one of the problems they face is they have no coaches whatsoever. I mean, it's all college kids, and sometimes they find a couple of kids who are a couple years out of college to judge, but for the most part, they judge each other. So it's there's no real sort of sense of grown-ups there, you know. And so one of the things they've instituted about 8 years ago, and I was asking Matt Scrolla about this because he did a lot of APTA stuff, is they have at every tournament, I believe, designated somebody from the tournament director, the host school, who is called the equity officer.
Yeah, I know about this.
And right. That person's explicit role is to listen to and help navigate through on the behalf of people who have complaints centering on discrimination about gender or race or sexuality or whatever other, you know, type of trouble that they could have. And they do two things. First of all, they're identified very clearly and they're known, and they're not somebody who works in tab. They're somebody who's out there in the tournament so that they're accessible and reachable, not going to be, oh, I don't have time for this, we're pairing round four, you know. And they could be talked to and approached at any time. But the other thing they do is they put a complaint or a comment box somewhere in the tournament, and they try to find some place that's, you know, accessible to everybody, but not like in the middle of the public, so you're not walking through 30 people to put something into the comment box. And so that way you can give feedback and make a complaint or register something that might be off anonymously if you're not comfortable talking to somebody directly. And it got me thinking, I wonder if one of the troubles here is not that, I mean, my first reaction to this thread was to say, you know, I really should try to keep my ears open more, and I really should be a little bit more sensitive to this, and I should have more of a hair trigger that when I hear a girl be talked about like this, even if she's not present, that I make it clear to the boys that this is not okay. You know, just try to keep an ear out, and if I hear Sophie or somebody else getting, you know, talked to in a way that's inappropriate, be more likely to cut in and tell them to knock it off, right? Mm-hmm. And then I realized, you know, how often am I really going to be walking by in the hallway? You know, I'm busy at tournaments. I do a lot of things. I run them, you know?
Right.
And so would it be a good idea, perhaps, to have designated in the judge pool, you know, somebody who's out there in the midst of the tournament, not going to be busy at the times everybody's free, somebody to perform a similar role? And what Matt said, what was interesting, is that this facility doesn't get used very often. You don't hear very many actual formal complaints. But when they put the thing in place, women said they felt much more comfortable. Because what it is it's saying at the very front of the tournament, saying right in the outset, this is something we take seriously. This is an environment where these things are not expected to occur. And if they do occur, there is somebody whose job it is to make sure consequences rain upon the heads of those who have done so. And I think the effect of calling that out explicitly and saying, you know, we as a community and we as tournament hosts or whatever, you know, expect that this is not acceptable and put a facility in place to ensure that it's not acceptable or not accepted, I think we might be able to learn from that.
I'm making a note of this as we talk. I mean, because this has, I would suggest that I don't know how to necessarily do this, but there are other things that happen at tournaments where, you know, there's people want to complain about a judge or something like that, and they might come to tab or whatever. But I think kids sometimes might be uncomfortable about doing this, and it's not because of a sexist thing necessarily, but, you know, an incompetence thing, or the judge was on their phone all over the round or whatever.
Right.
And then they come into tab, and we're like, you know, it's sort of rough for us because we're like, you're right, we're really like trying to do round four, you know, kind of stuff, and you want to solve it. Yeah.
I mean, I've thought about having an ombuds person at a tournament before in general, which I mean, it's a slightly separate issue, but maybe not, you know. So
maybe not. Same role. Who knows? And it'd be nice to have somebody who can filter in those kinds of feedback to the tab and is sensitive to when tab is ready to listen and when tab can't listen, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
there are times where you can't hold up the whole tournament, but sometimes you really want to, you know, drop everything and solve a problem if something really serious were to occur.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you want to do something, but usually you're just trying to make it go away. I mean,
right.
You know, which is
right. And let's be honest with ourselves, the kind of personality that makes a good tab staff is not exactly cuddly and approachable.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah. Get to your round, you little bastard! You know, I mean, like, that's...
I hardly ever say that, you know. but, I mean, I like the thing, and I can also see what Matt was saying, too, where if you do this, it affects the atmosphere, because the problem is, I mean, or it seems to be that we're saying that the problem is the atmosphere at the tournaments allows things to happen. So anything we can do to change the atmosphere of the tournaments, or even if it's perceptual and, you know, not that much happens, still does change the atmosphere of the tournament. So any, and if we can direct that, you know, because you've got 300 or 400 kids packed together under, you know, a lot of high adrenaline, in a high adrenaline situation. So to help it along, because I don't think people are trying to be idiots, you know, and if you can help them somehow just help the atmosphere, it sounds like a good thing.
The very reason why I think, why I don't necessarily feel comfortable making a self-enforcement thing and wanting to make a mechanism for the girls or whoever else to report in, is the reason why I think it happens in the first place, which is that men don't necessarily know what crosses the line with women, and 15-year-old boys sure as hell don't know what crosses the line with women. I feel like a lot of this is blundered into, and there's no way to, you know, throw the penalty flag and say, "Oh, damn, 5 yards. All right, try that again, kid." Right?
I mean, I would suggest, therefore, we probably would have a woman be the person who does this.
Mm-hmm. No, not necessarily. I mean,
well, I mean, there are other forms of discrimination also that certainly happen in debate. I mean, well, actually, I have to say, I find that high school debate is, I feel certainly, I mean, certainly it's not perfect, but high school debate in many ways is a very friendly space for gay students. And although I've heard language that I would prefer not to hear, and have
informed students that
I'd prefer not to hear. But, you know, certainly race is something that, it's interesting because race is an issue that I think is actually discussed a little bit more directly in terms of debate than gender. Right. People run feminist critiques, but it is more often that you hear about arguments that are about, well, if race. You hear about in-round arguments, race arguments in debate about debate are far more, as far as I can tell, are far more common than gender arguments in debate. You know, there are
It touches on economics too.
Absolutely. And I was about to say economics, you know, Quinn Olivares, who's down in Texas, sent me a suggestion for eventually doing a thread on economic issues and debate and stuff like that, which I definitely think are also very relevant.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It struck me as a low-cost method to try. I don't think it'll solve for everything, but it might, you know, increase the atmosphere at least.
I mean, certainly just the discussion on victory briefs, the kind of stuff that goes on, it does heighten awareness. I mean, because, like I said, the people aren't trying to be bastards. They're just sort of stumbling into it. You know?
Some of them may be, but I feel like the problem isn't the one who's trying to be a bastard. It's the 20 people who let them, you know?
Yeah.
That's the trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens is the victim gets to be the odd person out, not the bastard. Hmm. Yeah.
But, I mean, there are other things. I mean that. We seem to be thinking that we do start out with that same number, male, female, at the beginning of their freshman year. We lose them for whatever reason, or they gravitate to this and that. But
I don't think it's 50-50. But I think it's a lot better than ends up at their senior year.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I mean, I wonder if there's if you can ever pinpoint why or ever really do too. I mean, aside from what we're saying here, if in fact this is causal, I mean, if there's anything else that you can put your finger on and say, well, okay, this is something, because it's certainly, I mean, we're coming from positions that we all probably believe that this is good for everybody. So we want everybody to do it. And you're sort of, well, I wouldn't want to lose all the girls. I wouldn't want to lose all the African-Americans. I wouldn't want to lose all the Hindus. I wouldn't want to lose all of anything. You know, I want to have everybody be able to do this. I don't think there's, you know, I think there's benefits for everybody in all of the activities. And so, let's go back to something we said at the very beginning. Or John, you said, I mean, that the policy faces these issues or has faced these.
Sure.
Has policy done anything about this, or is it just going?
Well, actually, policy seems to have more of an open discussion about these things. There's a Women's Debate Institute. There have been times where the NDCA tournament has not hosted, but at the NDCA tournament, there have been like a women's dinner. There's been, on the other hand, LD has done stuff like that. Stacey Thomas promoted a women's round robin. And the one time that I went to it with a student, I've had students go to it without me, but the one time I went to it with a student, it was an amazing experience, actually. And I'm saying that not as a woman, but it's, but it was, it was really
I will speak as a woman. And I talked, because I was very curious about that, because I guess I was, my perception of it was, why would the debate be any different? Because it was girls. And so I talked to a lot of girls who had gone there, and I actually did, to just try to get my head around this. And what they said they liked about it was they just got to hang out with girls, you know, and that was relevant to what we've been saying.
And being judged very, very
not even that part of it. It was more just the idea of being in a social group where it was just girls, just, you know, they're just their peers. Pressure, a lot less pressure, social pressures, whatever they are, being there. And I guess there may be some of the things that are very negative, you know, so it's just a nice chance to hang out. And then, of course, all the other stuff, just being judged by women, would obviously be, you know, an interesting thing too. But I don't think that was the major appeal of, or certainly not the major thing people are taking away from it coming back, at least the ones I talked to.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, first off, policy debate is an older activity, so it's natural on some level that they would have more of a discussion of this. There's an interesting article that Sandy Berkowitz, who coaches at Blake in Minnesota, wrote about policy debate. And when this conversation started up in BBD, she sent me a link to it. She never, I don't think she reposted on that thread, but it was very interesting because it was very similar to the points that were coming up here. When this goes up on our blog, I'll post a link to it because I think it's still a very relevant article today. But I can't help but wonder if these issues at least are partially influenced. And I think that all the other things we're talking about that happened at the tournament itself, that happened before the tournament, et cetera, are equally relevant. But I can't help but think that one factor in this is the manner in which things are communicated in rounds and the double standard by which aggression is evaluated in rounds. I really do believe that. I believe that girls walk a tightrope that boys don't, in terms of aggressiveness in rounds. Mm-hmm. And I think that the style of debate, regardless of your views on the style of debate, I think that aggression in rounds has become more common because the rounds are not conversational. And I do believe that that has an impact on how the boys and girls are evaluated in rounds. I really do believe that. And I think that that is one factor of many that
I have a question, actually.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's a factor of how boys and girls are evaluated in rounds by judges? Or do you think maybe that girls, because of social cues and whatever, are less able to sort of let themselves go and be like that?
It's interesting.
I can't really remember.
Yeah. I voted against
– I've docked boys' speaker points left and right for being little bastards.
Sure.
But I can't remember the last time I did that to a girl.
I mean I would like to think that I haven't – well, I mean, I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to that, which maybe means the point is not even valid. But I don't know the answer to that directly. I mean, I'm pretty stingy with points to rude people. But I think that a lot of people – well, okay, I'll make the bold claim. All right, now I'm going to go into it. So if we have a professional class of judges who think it's cool to say speaker points, you know, I don't care about the presentation, blah, 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 even though they're called speaker points, but whatever – I wouldn't be surprised if some of those judges see the aggression of girls in a manner that's different than boys. I mean, I have no real way of proving this, but anecdotally, I think that that is the case because I think girls get called out a little bit more for their behavior in rounds than boys, or at least gain a reputation more than boys, at least in my experience. I don't know.
I think they gain a rep, but does that happen among judges or is it limited to the students where it's harmful, but at least –
well, if you have the same people judging over and over again, and they're socializing kids, that is going to carry over to those judges, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I forgot.
I'm coming at this from as you're saying this, I'm turning this around in my head. Maybe debate requires that you need to be aggressive to win it. And maybe guys are more aggressive than girls.
That has been raised before.
I mean, I have
worked. I don't want to believe that is the thing.
I have worked in an industry that is primarily that is dominated by women. Publishing is dominated by women, you know, I've had bosses, male bosses, female bosses, and you know, as a general rule, I mean, you know, I've noticed, maybe I'm wrong, that males and females are different. And, you know, maybe there is something in the activity that does reward a male approach rather than a female approach. I don't know. I don't know if I believe that, you know, but it could be true. That's a conversation stopper.
But I don't think, but then why
I'm
would
I? I'm going to be honest. Somebody just IM'd me and asked what I'm doing. And I said, I am recording a podcast. And they got very excited that it's the View from Tab podcast. And then now they know the secret of when it's recorded. So I'm telling them to shut up. But anyway,
we have groupies.
That was the, okay, yes. I'm sorry. So that was rude.
If that were true, though, Jim, why would it have not been like this in the 90s? And why would equal numbers of boys and girls?
It was like, I mean, to some extent, it was like this in the 90s. I mean, I remember in the 90s, again, very anecdotal, where I had my lead debater was a girl. And, you know, I noticed there were some issues in there. But, yeah, there were a lot more guys. And they just, you know, as a group, you know, the guys were very, very aggressive. Girl was aggressive, too. But I don't, you know, girls aren't necessarily, you know, don't act the same as boys. And are we saying that this activity is, you're going to be more successful if you, quote, act like a boy?
Well, though, yeah. if that's true, though, then why would girls sign up in the first place? I mean, it's not like...
They don't know. I mean, they're signing up for something they don't know.
I don't think people sign up for the debate team not expecting... I think people actually expect it to be more argumentative, not less. Mm.
But it's not... A debate is not argument. Debate is other things that happen.
Right. And, but the initial impression is that it's going to be all very argumentative, rah, 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 rah. And why would somebody who's not willing to be at least a little aggressive sign up for that in the first place?
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, but if it's simply a question of the percentage of people tend to be more male than female, and if guys tend to, like, you know, I mean, we know that guys, I mean, and yeah, this is a, you know, gross generalization, which is that guys like you know competitive sports more than girls, you know, and they play the competitive sports, or they are raised in it. I mean, if you want to go nature nurture and turn it around, it doesn't really matter. By the time they get to be 13 or 14, they have come up in that world, regardless of what the cause was. They were raised in that universe. And so by the time they're there, they have that background. So, like I said, I'm not saying I necessarily believe it, but I think it is a factor that has to be, to some extent, considered in this whole thing. And it has nothing to do with the treatment of people, obviously. I'm simply talking about the rounds themselves and the activity itself, and nothing else but that. Because if you take something like the Nationals, that we had the statistics on, you know, the imbalances are there. I mean, they're absolutely there. And are they there because these people are just better at this sort of competition because they were raised to be better at this competition, or they're innately better, whatever the hell the difference is. But by the time they are 18, that they are, in fact, better?
I don't know if I entirely buy that, because I don't think I agree that girls are necessarily less likely to go in for competitive sports. Mm-hmm. But the big difference there is that girls go on their own teams. They don't have to deal with boys.
Hmm. That's true.
You know, I don't see very many sports programs out there where they're desperately trying to recruit girls. They usually have tryouts that are just as competitive as the boys' sports are.
Yeah,
and by a lot, have to be as many spots too.
Yeah. I mean, I've come up in this whole in a world of feminism where, I mean, in the 70s, I mean, feminist thinking was that males and females were absolutely identical in all respects, and now thinking is that male and females are quite different in mental respects. Chemistry is different. Their physical thinking is different. This is always hard for me to get my mind around, because it's much more comforting for me to think that everybody is the same, and that, you know, we just somehow socialize people into certain roles and things like that. It's a very easy model for me to understand. But if people are actually different, I think it's much harder to get your head around it, because then you have to understand the science of it. I don't know. That's a curiosity. I just bring that up as a curiosity, more than anything else. So anyway, I think we actually at least have said something positive, which is, you know, that we think there is something we could do at tournaments. I mean, if all the discussion that we read on BBD, or at least what I read, a lot of it was really about the atmosphere of the thing more than anything else, and bad experiences people had had. And as people in a responsible position, if we can do something to lessen or eliminate those bad experiences, then we're doing a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we are in a position to do that, so we should.
That's true.
Yeah, we just do it. We just figure out some ways to do it. We see each other all the time.
I think one very positive thing would be for directors of programs that employ assistant coaches to talk with assistant coaches about these issues. It doesn't have to be in a manner that is like coming down hard on anyone or accusing them of anything. It's just to make them aware that these issues exist.
J'accuse.
Right.
Well, but like I said, I would also want to expand it. I would like to be able to cover other issues as well. I mean, of issue of discrimination, any issue of people not doing, you know, things that they ought to be doing at a tournament, that there should be some place to go where kids can get a fair hearing and know that they're getting a fair hearing. And that if the group as a whole knows that there's a place where people will go and get a fair hearing, I think that will have a beneficial effect on the atmosphere.
Yeah, I agree. I think structural solutions are to be desired when it's an issue like this. You know, you don't just leave it voluntary, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
right.
Well, I think that's good. Then our work here is done.
Excellent. Well, our work here has just begun.
Our work here is starting.
We've got to do it. This is one of those podcasts where we don't pontificate about everybody else doing stuff. This is actually in our court, isn't it?
But I mean, it's good that we actually came. I mean, I thought you'd just talk about this and come up with nothing.
I came prepared.
Useless.
What can I say? Yeah, Boy Scouts, right?
I like that. So finally, someone came prepared. You know, and it had
to
happen.
Years, right? Infinite number of monkeys. Infinite number of typewriters. Right?
Exactly. All right. Well. Anyhow, we shall, on that note, we'll see each other. I'm John. I'm going to see you this weekend.
Yes,
indeed. A couple of days. We will be over at Princeton.
Indeed. It should be a fun time.
It's a big tournament, nice big tournament. There's a very big PF field, like about 150 in the PF field. We have about 135, I think, 140, something like that. A lot of novices. And John, you've been actually making this thing. I mean, might as well just mention it, which is trying to get some more novice PF divisions, and I think everybody's responded favorably. It's a little hard to get them done in midstream, but I think we're.
Although I think breakouts are very easy, actually.
Breakouts can be done.
Breakouts are so easy. Yeah. They're easy, and they just make people happy. And I have a lot of certificate paper. I'm happy to make certificates.
Yeah, but we'll see if we can.
Of course, you do.
I'm happy to make them.
Yeah, let me just see if
it's so doable at any tournament.
Yeah, I mean, we've done it. I mean, I did it at Bump. It worked out at Bump. We're doing it at our little Mid-Hudson League tournaments. We're getting a little traction there this year. But you need to have the numbers. But, I mean, you're right. It's part of it is I think we're getting to the point now where people have novice PFers.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's the issue, is that people
have
them.
That is the issue.
For a breakout, you don't need the numbers either.
Right, exactly. It doesn't matter what the numbers are. That's what's so good.
My problem with the breakout is not the breaking out. It's the rounds that got you into the breaking out in the first place. Because if you're a poor schlub novice who hit nothing but varsity, you could be pretty good.
It is an imperfect system.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I'd rather have a separate. I'd rather have a separate division too,
but I think that in absence of a separate division, there is some value to recognizing at least some novices and getting them some rounds and making them feel that there is something that they could, you know, break into. I mean, what I say about breakouts is very simple to people who think, what, breakout? Like, I think most people would have difficulty imagining never having a novice LD division. And just saying, well, and actually some people don't, because in some places in the country, Texas, for example, it is expected that novices debate a lot against varsities, and there's something to be said about that.
There's something that's fine, but their own division is good too.
Yeah.
I mean, I like debating up. I think everybody should debate up, but you should also be able to debate over, you know.
Right, sure.
And have some stuff. So we mentioned that here. I mean, if you are running a tournament, putting together a tournament, and you're going to have PF, try a novice division.
Absolutely.
You know, because they got to start somewhere. Around here, we have novice policy. We have novice LD. Why wouldn't you have?
And
we
even
have, speech.
There are even speech tournaments where there are JV and novice only.
We
divisions.
Have JV now. We're freshmen and sophomores doing OI and I think Extemp.
That's in New York
CFL.
Only, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's for them, because I think it's even worse, because they always have to debate varsity. So the day you open your mouth, you're debating somebody who's been doing this for, you know, the last 3 years.
Well, I actually don't like having novice events in speech, because I believe it's mostly a trophy thing, because in a speech round, the quality of your competitor's performance does not affect yours. Whereas just getting up there and getting absolutely creamed by a varsity debater does affect you, how you do directly as well. You know, whereas how you get up and give your speech has nothing to do with whatever everybody else in the room is doing.
That's okay, though, that we give get some trophies out there to the younger ones and encourage them. I mean, you know, as long as we know we're doing
what it is, but there is no competitive value there. It really is mostly about motivating them and giving them awards.
So, I think that's important. But we know we all have that drop off from second to third year, and to keep that from happening to because second year can be very tough, even under the best of circumstances, and so. You know, not to get that. Yeah, you know, I don't mind if people drop off because they're going to go do something else because they're tired of this. But if they would, we could have kept them, and it would have been beneficial for them. I hate to lose them, and I think we are losing some of those people that would be better off having stayed. You know, those are the ones we don't want to lose.
Right.
Yeah.
Hopefully, not to sexism.
Sure.
If we can do anything about it, anyway. Right.
All right. All right. Well, anyhow, so Chris, we're not going to see each other till. God knows when.
Probably Big Lex, right?
Goodness.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Big Lex. Just around the corner.
It's not that far away, unfortunately.
True.
Two things. The registration, how's the registration for Lexington going?
I haven't looked at it. I mean, I assume it's fine. Sarah hasn't freaked out at me yet, so.
I haven't looked at it. I was looking at the other thing we're going to be together at, which is UPenn, and need to get some people signing up for UPenn. We need to get some
people. Yeah, most
people
don't know.
I didn't know that a lot of people know that it's open. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It's not on the front page of Tab Room yet, so we just have to put it out there, but I just haven't done that yet. I'm probably going to do in the next week or so.
Yeah, cool. Because that one, I like that tournament. It's a nice tournament, and I'd like to see more people going down there. I think we did a good job last year on that one.
It was great.
Harvard alternative. If you're not going to Harvard, come to UPenn. Simple as that.
And you'll spend less money than your entire on one kid, you know, for your entire team than one kid going to Harvard.
And you get a Philly cheesesteak.
And you get a Philly cheesesteak.
What more could you possibly ask for? All right, guys, take care. I will see you whenever.
Enjoy this weekend. If possible.
Thank you much.
If possible.